tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step,
step by step,
day by day, I'm on the road to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
How's everybody doing tonight? Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Studies Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. Now, I don't think I could follow the hilarity that is Zach R., so I brought up Stephanie here to tell the joke tonight.
Stephanie, recovered alcoholic. A man in a hot air balloon realized he was lost. He saw a person on the ground and yelled down to him, "Can you help me? I don't know where I am." The man replied, "Sure, I'll help you. You're in a hot air balloon hovering 30 feet above the ground, between 40 and 41 degrees north latitude, and between 59 and 60 degrees west longitude." "Wow, you must be an AA sponsor," said the man in the balloon. "I am," said the man, "but what gave me away?" "Well," answered the balloonist, "everything you told me is technically right, but I am still lost. Frankly, you're not much help at all, and you might even have delayed my trip." "You must be an AA sponsee," replied the man. The man in the balloon was amazed and said, "I am, but how did you know?" The man on the ground said, "Well, you don't know where you are or where you're going. You have risen to where you are due to a lot of hot air. You're expecting other people to solve your problems, and the fact is that you're in exactly the same position you were in before we met. But somehow now, it's my fault."
I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Jeff. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise or that will or might distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away, and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. And if everybody's ready, let's start the meditation.
Yes.
Alrighty, we're going to do the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, you can either follow along here or repeat after me. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light. For those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. There is a solution from the big book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Andre to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. Let's hear for Andre.
Alcoholic Andre. Spiritual Experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes, or religious experiences, must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily to everybody, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life. That such a change would hardly be brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all argument, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane or meeting mode or just turn them off. If you need to make a call that bad, there's a nice parking lot outside. So I think there's a lot to be said between the difference of knowledge and wisdom. And, you know, knowledge is something that stores in your brain. And as we all know, we're people who can't really trust our mind sometimes. And I think wisdom is something that's learned through action and comes from your gut and your heart. And I definitely believe the man speaking tonight always leads with his heart. So help me welcome Peter.
Thank you. Okay. I have wisdom. Now that's a funny joke. All right. My name is Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank this group for having me here to share with you what it was like, what happened, what it's like now, and how it's been for me as a result of taking this work into my life and letting God do what God does. June 23rd, 1988 was my separation from alcohol, and I'm still here, thank the good Lord. by the grace of God, as we say many times in Alcoholics Anonymous, by the grace of God that I'm here, and what this work and good sponsorship has allowed me to do, pardon me, is have an experience with that power that gives me grace, where I got to experience oneness with God rather than separateness with God, praying to God but not really being immersed with that power. And what the big book allowed me to do was through a lot of chopping wood and carrying wood is remove the things that are blocking me from this power called God. And coming to meetings is not going to do that. That's been my experience, because I would come to a meeting and fall right into the fellowship, and the camaraderie was a band-aid on an open wound, but I had to leave after an hour or so and go back out there and try to deal with life, as I was told, on life's terms. And the good news is I can't do life on life's terms, but my book showed me how to do life on God's terms. I just got to share with you, today I'm out in the parking lot at work, and it's like a billion degrees out this time of year, and I'm going back and forth, and I'm totally exhausted, and I look across the street, and there is a fellow walking, probably mid-30s, homeless, and he had this big sweater wrapped around his neck and knotted here, and he had these heavy pants on that were kind of, he was homeless, that they were torn and they were dirty, and he had these sneakers that were begging to be put out of their misery that he was wearing, and he had a growth on his face, and his hair was all dirty, and looking at his face, he looked like he was in a lot of pain. And I told one of the gentlemen I work with, I says, that was me in 1988 before I got sober, where I would just, this guy was aimless, and I would just wander through the streets looking to hustle money, beg for money, do whatever I had to do to get to the liquor store and go hide away, and I was just completely inappropriate. I had a turtleneck, a jacket on, these like heavy work pants and construction boots, and I'm sweating and cold at the same time. And I looked at this guy and I saw myself, the physical torment of trying to keep it going, of being homeless and on the streets and being a slave to alcohol, because I suffer from alcoholism, active alcoholism. Because I sober up, it doesn't mean I'm non-alcoholic. I'm still alcoholic till the day I die. But I was suffering from active alcoholism, and alcohol was my master. The thing that I walk with, and this gentleman had it just coming out of him. It was just oozing out, just looking at him for a couple of minutes. Was he also had that emotional pain going on. And I got the sense that he was very hip to what was going on in his life. Some of those cats who walk the street, they're oblivious. Because Mary and I, we give money to the homeless. We try to talk to them when we see them. And some of them are just on another planet. They lost their way completely, probably a point to no return. But this guy looked like he was very acutely aware of what he was in, which makes it that much more painful. And my heart broke looking at this guy, but I was looking at a reflection of me. And how apropos, because I just came up with another AA birthday, and it was this thing that appeared in front of me, this person, and that's where I left off in 1988. So as exhausted as I am tonight, it took a lot to get here tonight, and I live about a mile from this meeting. I could roll out of bed and get here. I feel like I rolled out of bed and got here. I just, you know, chop wood and carry water and get myself here and suit up and show up. Because I never want to get back to that place again. In fact, the road going back there, I probably won't even make it that far. I'd probably just keel over and collapse and die. It was that horrific for me. And we all have our own bottoms. And pain is pain, whether it's Park Avenue or Park Bench. We all have our stories that got us here. And my story was homelessness and that kind of degradation and humiliation. I often share the story. I was in Brooklyn, and I was headed to downtown Manhattan because that's where the action was. And I had no money, but I knew once I get down, I'll figure out a way to hustle up money, to get some drugs, and I'll just get what I need to get. And so I get on the train. And I have a hoodie over my head. I have this growth going on. I don't know, it's about a week, I hadn't shaved. I'm not bathing. And I got these clothes on. I'm a homeless person. And I sneak on the train, Mr. Big Shot, got to sneak on the train. It's really humiliating when the cops pull you over and they lecture you. And you're like 20 in your 20s and the cops telling you you can't do this again. And people are looking at you like loser. And I get on a train and I'm staring at the floor. And we come to a stop and I hear a woman and what sounded like little toddlers getting on the train with her. And they sit. I know they're right in front of me. And on the trains, you know, you kind of sit parallel. And I can't look up because I know they're looking at me. And I know what I look like. I'm aware of what I'm doing. I'm aware of what my life has turned into, a toilet. And I can't look up. I can't look up. And after a couple of stops, I lift my eyes up, and there's a mom and three little daughters. She had three of them. And God be my witness, they were staring at me. And it was the realization, again, of where my life is at this point. The point of no return. And when you get those moments, all you want to do is crawl back under a rock and pray to die. And yet I was going down to the neighborhood to repeat the thing that was actually killing me. And it's an interesting thing that happens to us. The very substance that we know, or alcohol, whatever it might be that we know, that I knew was killing me, I still had to go back to, return to, put in my body. Even though I know, and you ever curse the liquor? You're killing me. But I need to go back there to do that because it was a matter of survival, because I knew if I don't drink, I'm going to get violently ill shortly. So here I am getting the stuff, and I know it's killing me, but I have no way out. And I kept going back there over and over and over again. And that's part of alcoholism. And I remember thinking so many times when I was out there, the if-only story. We all have this if-only thing that goes on. If only I grew up in another neighborhood. If only my family was rich. If only mom was an alcoholic. If only mom didn't commit suicide. If only my dad was more of a down-to-earth guy. And it went on and on and on. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I would look across the room, and there's a guy looking at me and says, if only I had Pete's life, I would have been better. So we have this if-only thing where we compare rather than identify. You know, I would sit in treatment centers and hear some, you know, the cocaine guys who only did cocaine. I hated those guys because they detox in 20 minutes and they're ready to go. You know, they're going to the gym, they're working out because it's 2-3 days and they're back on the horse again. And I'm in a ball just crumbling. And I said, if only I was like that guy. And they're looking at me as if only I was like Pete. And it did me nothing good. On page 24 in the big book, if I can get to it, it talks about how, you know, sometimes we hear in Alcoholics Anonymous thinking to drink through, playing the tape to the end, keep it green, those type of things, and it doesn't work. People tell us that they mean well when they say, play the tape to the end, keep it green, remember the pain of yesterday, live life on life's terms. Those things are futile in the face of alcoholism. And if you're a real alcoholic, they're not going to do you much justice. Page 24 says this. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into my mind to deter me. If these thoughts occur, they're hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea, foolish idea, that this time I'm going to handle myself like those other people. It says, when this sort of thinking is fully established in an individual with alcoholic tendencies, I have placed myself beyond human aid. And unless locked up, may die or go permanently insane. I've been locked up. I continue to drink. I've been in treatment centers. I continue to drink. I try to get the relationship, the human power. I continue to drink and blew up the relationship. I've had money. I've had no money. I had a nice place to live. I was homeless. I continue to drink. My book says, if I'm seriously alcoholic, as we believe, there's no middle of the road solution. And that always puzzled me when they talk about this middle of the road solution. And unfortunately, some newcomers are given middle-of-the-road solutions by loving people. I never believe that anyone in AA is trying to hurt another AA. They just don't have the facts to help a real alcoholic, the person on page 21, who has the mental obsession, phenomena called craving, and the spiritual malady. Now, most of the planet has a spiritual malady. We have it, too. I have it, too. coupled with the obsession to go back to that which is killing me and phenomenon called craving. And I get in a vice grip and it just gets tighter and tighter. But the middle of the road solution is anything that doesn't give me specific directions on how to have a spiritual awakening. Like don't drink, go to meetings, put the plug in a jug, make more coffee, get a speaking commitment, get an H&I commitment, all great things. But it doesn't give me instructions on how to be rid of this thing that has me in its grip called alcoholism. How to live life out there on terms other than my own. Am I willing to live on terms other than my own? Am I willing to play by someone else's rule? Am I willing to be trained and transformed in Alcoholics Anonymous? Am I willing to be made fundamentally different from the inside out, from deep down in my soul, where the spark ignites to manifest outwards, where the point of view completely changes, where my perceptions and conceptions on life do the 180. I need to be all in. And for me, before I even entertain that, I had to be in a place of complete desperation. And when we're in a place, when I was in a place of desperation, it did not feel good. I felt like I was imploding, that everything I thought life was about was not. Ideas, attitudes, and conceptions about life were cast aside. Not because I cast them aside, because I came to the realization that anything I do in my power get me drunk. Anything I do in my power is going to blow up. I will contaminate anything. Now, the ego doesn't want to entertain that. And if you can't identify with that, you're either non-alcoholic or haven't hit that place yet. But any alcoholic in this room, Park Avenue, Park Bench, when we live life forward and learn it backwards, when we look back at our life, we say, yeah, anyone I came in contact with, I contaminated, I destroyed. I never showed up on time. I made promises I couldn't fulfill, and I had to get drunk over and over and over again. And I don't know if you're like me, but there were plenty of times I said, I am not going to get drunk today. I am not drinking. I'm not even going to have a taste, and I'm liquor store getting a fifth. Swearing that wasn't going to happen. Or I get the bottle, and I'd say I nurse it. But once I taste the honey, I can't get away from it. So last week we talked a little bit about step one. It talks about in our big book that we have two alternatives, to go on to the bitter end or accept spiritual help. I'm an alcoholic. I want door number three. And they're only giving me two doors. Go on to the bitter end, which means I die. Because the big book says to drink is to die. Go on to the bitter end means I'm going to suffer more alcoholism lifestyle, which means more humiliation, more degradation, more of that. Or accept spiritual help. Now, if I'm not an alcoholic, the spiritual help, I'll take what I want and leave the rest. You ever hear this one? Take what you want and leave the rest. I'm telling a newcomer who can't even tie their shoes without a committee meeting, for them to discern what to leave and what to take. It's bizarre. But when I got here in 1988, the spiritual path looked frightening to me because I didn't know it. You can't see where you're going on this walk. I couldn't see where I was going. I couldn't see tomorrow. I didn't know what these steps were going to do to me. I didn't know what you guys were going to do to me. But it had to be better than what I was doing. That took a lot of years of hitting bottom after bottom after bottom, where circumstances brought me to a place, as a big book says, a spirit of willingness. And upon that spirit of willingness, I was able to take another foot and take another foot and take another foot. People in Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys asked me to walk a walk I never did before, to take 12 steps into my life I knew nothing about, and to experience a power called God I had no experience with. And the only thing that allowed me to put one foot in front of the other, chop wood and carry water, was the passion deep down in here that every one of us have to get right with the Creator. I tried to find that in the bottom of a whiskey bottle, and it worked for a little while. Where somewhere in that pint, somewhere in that quart, you get electrified and everything's good again. And then it runs out. And then the head goes away and you got to start all over again. And so that's what I did. I think last week we talked about our book has 43 pages dedicated to step one. 43 pages, not a couple of paragraphs, not a few pages, but 43 pages that talk to me about what I suffer from. And after 7 treatment centers, I had a decent idea what I suffered from. I really had no idea what I suffered from until someone sat me down and looked at my life experientially and applied it to this book. Looked at the first 9 pages in Bill's story. I'm not a stockbroker. I can't even count to 10 without 20 people helping me. Bill was a wannabe stockbroker. Bill was a visionary. Bill was a fast talker. He was a salesman. That is so not me. He was probably the guy in the center room holding court at a party. That is so not me. How do I identify with this guy? Because I looked at the first 9 pages on how Bill felt, thought, and drank. That's me. Bill swears off alcohol only to get drunk again. Swears off alcohol only to get drunk again. I'm never going to drink again only to get drunk again. And the trapdoors have trapdoors. I can identify with that. You know, sitting with my dad and my brothers and getting out of treatments, I swear it's never going to happen again. I'm already drunk. Sitting in treatment and raising my hands saying, I'm done. I'm going to do everything you tell me. No, I'm not. I just want to get out of here because I got to drink. And what's really frightening for a guy like me, the real alcoholic, I always got drunk sober. Once I'm drinking, I'm drinking. Now I'm on the drunk. But I always picked up the first drink, stone cold sober. My body didn't need alcohol, but the mind always says, yeah, we do. And we're not going to get into trouble. It's going to tell me what it's going to do for me, never to me. Right? Your little dope fiends out there, that bag of dope doesn't tell you in about 3-4 days or a week, we have a habit. And you're going to need a wake up in the morning. It doesn't tell you that the first time you cop. It says, I'm copping. It's going to be groovy. Yeah. And then a week later, you're waking up. First you get the chip and then you get the thing and here we go again. And you're stealing from mama's purse. And every time I went to the liquor store to get a pint, it was, I'm just going to have this pint. It's really okay. And I'm going to go to AA meetings and turn into Moses. But the problem was once I started drinking alcohol, I couldn't stop. Huh? So step one tells me I'm drinking. Step one doesn't tell me I can't. It tells me I am. 29 years sober, there's a drink waiting for me somewhere. Because I'm still alcoholic. The thing that is in front of the alcohol for me, which steps in front of the bullet, is this power called God. That I need, I must, I got to have a relationship with, not just, and I speak for myself, not just talk about God, not quote scripture, not quote the big book, but have a relationship with God. And for me, a relationship means I'm spending time with that person. It's not just a passing acquaintance. I'm spending time and I'm transparent. I'm exposing everything to this power and I'm surrendering and begging for mercy every morning. Right? A daily surrender for successful living. And that's how I start my prayers off, with the surrender, because in my brokenness, I can never pull this off a day at a time. It's impossible for a guy like me to do that. I'm alcoholic. Somewhere my mind's going to hijack me and I'll get drunk. I mean, this has happened to me. I don't know if it's ever happened to you. You get on your knees and you're praying, you're into your prayer, and maybe you do some meditation. Then you get up off your knees, and it's like the hell with them, and the hell with them, and the hell with them. And by the time you get in your car, you've committed 45 homicides. Right? And you're that way all day long, and then you walk into home group, and Joe, how you doing? I'm wonderful. Everything's just absolutely wonderful. Yeah. The old timers would do this. When a kid, how you doing? I said, I'm good. And they would follow my eyes. They just, really? You good? Let's get a second opinion. Step one, admitted with powerless over alcohol, dash that I lies that become unmanageable. I don't know if I did this last week, but I'll just do it quickly. Powerless over alcohol. That's in the mind before I even pick up a drink. And more about alcoholism, chapter 3, is dedicated to the mind. It doesn't mean it's self-help and we're going to train ourselves and use positive affirmations to stay sober. It just reveals the inner workings of the mind, how the tricks that the mind is, the predator that the mind is. 23 to 43 is all about the mind. 17 to 23 is the body. No power, no choice, and no control in the mind before I even pick up a drink, which means while I'm sober, without spiritual muscles, I'm already screwed. When I'm working on my 90, you know, we hear that, I'm working on my 90, or I'm in treatment, I'm already screwed. What I'm doing is resting up for another run. Unless I've gone through the work in 90 days and sponsoring a few guys, then maybe not. Alcoholism, my alcoholism is not impressed that I'm doing this 12-step series. My alcohol is not impressed how long I'm sober. My alcohol is not impressed with any good that I do. What it pays attention to is when the wheel starts to get loose on the bus. Then it bores a hole in there. It just waits. You don't need to pray today. You can cut back on a little meditation. You can take a few days off. Don't answer that phone. And then it gets in. Then I'm powerless over alcohol, no choice of control once the stuff goes in. And then I'm drinking again. I got this phenomenon called craving. Now, what happens to someone like me, because I have a really bad reaction to just being abstinent, my experience proved that, I can't do abstinence good. I got to starve the ego and feed the spirit rather than the other way around. I don't do abstinence well. I don't do don't drink and go to meetings well. I'm restless, irritable, and discontented. I'm manipulating. I'm a liar. I'm uncomfortable. I'm in fear. I'm all over page 52, and a drink starts to look good. And that's my current unmanageability. What I need to do to combat this thing is find God. And I don't mean God's lost, but go in. The journey's in order to go out. And that's the essence of this unmanageability, that if I don't get spiritual muscles, at some point in my life, I will get hijacked by a drink. And once I pick up a drink, I need to have the second drink, then I need to have the third drink, and I'm drunk again. And I'm in a point of no return. And I can't even see that day when it's coming. A book uses the word suddenly. Suddenly the thought crossed my mind, he says in the stories. Suddenly the thought crossed my mind. I couldn't see suddenly coming. I couldn't call my sponsor and say, suddenly's around the block. You know, I'm having suddenly feelings right now. Suddenly knocks on a door, kicks the door open, and I'm drunk. Cunning, baffling, and powerful, impatient. This is a thing that we have that most of us don't get well with. Most of us die with alcoholism. You know. By inches and seconds am I standing here tonight. When I look back on my, I live it forward and I learn it backwards. And I look back on my life, I can see all the God winks that I got to pull me out of harm's way. And I was close a few times. And I'm sure many of us had the guns put to us and the knives put to us and the beatings and just missed a raid in the building. And it goes on and on. For some reason, the judge let you go that morning. He was sending everyone away for a million years. You show up and he let you go. All these little things. And then we come into AA, and I do. I can't find God. I don't see any workings of God in my life. So when I'm completely surrendered in step one, and we get split open, and only in the splitting open, the breaking open, was where God's light can shine. And that was June 23rd, 1988 for me. It didn't feel good when God split me open like that. I didn't decide to quit that day and go to AA. It just got that bad. And I crumbled to the floor. It was a surrender, and I didn't even realize I was surrendering. But God brought me to, God rescued me, scooped me up from that scrap heap and live a life better than the best I've known. I didn't know that was going on. I just knew something. I can't do this anymore. One more drink, I'm going to die. And if I don't get a drink, I'm going to die. Oh my God, what am I going to do? Please take me from this. How dark it is before the dawn, Bill says. My mind didn't say, we're going to go to treatment. We're going to go to aftercare. We're going to go to, you know, halfway house. We're going to come to Mike Chase's group and speak. I didn't want any part of Alcoholics Anonymous. And God, in his infinite mercy, didn't say, you're going to AA, and didn't say, you're going to treatment, because I may have run. What God allowed me to do was call my old man, and I couldn't even get him on the phone. And my dad happened to be looking for me that day, because God works through people, scoop me up and place me in treatment. That was not the plan. When I ask God for help, when he sends the help, it's not the help I was planning on. Right? Because if I planned that, I'd be drunk. God says, okay, one of my kids need help. He thinks I'm sending him money. I'm sending him his dad. Uh-oh. So I get leveled in step one. And we kind of do that while we're out there. We have that experience that, hey, there's something really wrong with me. I can't stop drinking. I make promises. I take oaths. I do all these things. And I keep getting drunk. And my mind keeps taking me back to that which is killing me. We come to that, when a book says we concede to our innermost self, when that happened to me on June 23rd, 1988, that wasn't a thing that happened up here. It happened deep down in here. That submission, that surrender is a spiritual event when that happens. So that's why the book is not aimed at the mind. The book is aimed at the spirit. Only the soul, only the spirit, only the heart can do this walk. The mind can't do recovery. The mind does self-help and then gets me drunk. Only the spirit can do this. So this book goes right past the mind, reveals the mind to us, but it really gives me soul food by experiencing the death of self. And so when I'm completely leveled and they tell me, you are going to drink again, and I get that at a gut level, I am going to drink again. I'm doomed to drink again no matter what I do. In fact, I'll go further. Those of us who are sober, going to meetings, my illness is not done with me, because what we can experience are sprees where alcoholism will go underground and resurface in other areas. That's happened to me. The sex spree. The food spree. I was sharing last night, my first 6 months, or even longer than that, I was binging and purging. I had this eating disorder because of the poison I felt in here. And I never heard many men talk about having eating disorders. My mind said, that's a gender issue. I can't tell anyone I have this eating disorder that has just shown up. I'm binging and purging. But there I was. Sex sprees, food sprees, money sprees. I remember becoming, when I finally got a job and I was saving some money, I went on this, what I would call a money spree, where I was checking my checking account 3 times a day. I know it sounds nuts. I swear I'm not lying. I was Chemical Bank, or one of Citibank, and they had this little number you call to get your account. I would do it like 3 times a day because I had some money. Who's going to take it? And I was penny pinching. Anyone knows I'm not a penny pincher. I'm an overspender. But I was penny pinching because hoarding money. Money, 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 money. Got to make more money. I'll never make money until I'm not afraid of being poor. So I did all of these things where the illness went underground and resurfaced in other areas. And that became, money became my God. Sex became my God. The food thing became my God. Relationship became my God. So if those things are God, how can I seek God? How can I serve God when I'm a slave to other things? And again, I had a bottom out in December of 1988. Bottomed out again. And they painted me into a corner in step one, where I really felt more hopeless in here than I did out there. Because now I'm sitting in AA meetings, and I'm not much better. I'm just dry. And I'm all over page 52. I have 100 forms of fear on me. I have the chatter of 1,000 voices, and I'm restless, irritable, and discontented, waiting to just get into that groove, waiting to get some traction. And it wasn't happening. I started to critique speakers, compare, instead of identify. And I was heading back to another drunk. And then I showed up at a gentleman's doorstep in Cottage Grove, Minnesota. And I showed up to his door and I told him my tales of woe. You know, how bad it was for me. I'm missing home. And it went on and on and on, all of my troubles. Like when the newcomer calls you, you say hello, and 4 hours later they're still talking about everything. Right? I love you newcomers. Because I did what you do. And when I finally came up for breath and paused, he said, where are you with God in the 12 steps? He's when you start the steps. He's when you start throwing up. You're late. I was at the jumping off place, going to meetings and not drinking, and it wasn't working. And they presented a pointer to the solution in step two, where God is here to seek and to save a wretch like me. God's going to any lengths to find someone like me, going to any lengths, put anything he can in front of me to get my attention, and would allow me to bottom out in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if it means getting drunk to get my attention, he'll allow that too. That seems radical and drastic, but anything to get my attention. Remove the relationship, remove the money, remove the job, remove everything. Maybe even a health scare to get my attention, because God doesn't operate the way I think he ought to operate. God doesn't think like me, thank God. He sees way down the road and will remove things that are blocking me from him purposely to get my attention, to save my life. Seek and to save. Many times I disagreed with God's methodology. There's times now I say, I don't think, God, you're doing it right. I got a better plan. Read it. Until we cross over to the other side, back into the sunlight of the Spirit, again, we look back and we learn our life. Thank God it didn't go my way. So he presented me with a pointer to the solution. Came to believe. I will arrive at this place. sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. But I got to arrive at this place where this power, capital P, was going to restore me to sanity, wholeness of mind, truth, living in with God. Oneness with God, the sunlight of the Spirit. I didn't even know what the heck they were talking about. I just said, I want what you got to offer. I was willing to be made fundamentally different. We can look at someone who's in the sunlight of the Spirit, those folks who walk into a room and you know they're lit up. There's something going on with them. Their walk is their sermon. And you want what they have to offer because it looks so wonderful, but that can coexist with the reluctance to do what they did. And it wasn't about just being rid of some of the defects and working on my assets. I had to be in a place, position myself, and step one did this, position myself where I was willing to have someone rip out the whole root and branch, the whole thing, and put it in new soil, which meant I was going to be made incredibly uncomfortable. That's the spiritual walk. The road got narrow quick, and I didn't even get into step three yet. But those are the conditions to go to the solution, the pointer to the solution, step two. Because if it was up to me, who I'm lazy and irresponsible on my own power, let's just trim some of the dead leaves off the tree. That's good enough. Just make me look good. And AA said, no, because you're going to get bad leaves again because the roots are rotten. We got to pull the whole thing out. And so I held on. I said, well, go. And it wasn't so bad. We talk about the leap of faith very often in Alcoholics Anonymous. My experience has been, what leap? Out of desperation, I'm grabbing onto a life raft because I'm drowning. That's not a leap. It's survival. And early recovery for me was really, literally survival. There's no leap. God's given me the endurance, the inspiration to take this, what seems like a chance. And so I leap with the sponsor into this work. And right in the middle where we think we're going to fall, there's no gravity in God's world. God's got me in his hands and brings me to the other side and lets me down gently. There's no leap. My mind creates a leap. My mind creates, oh my God, how am I going to do this? And then I compare it to some of the many, any lengths I did to get another drink in me. That's drastic. That's a leap. This is like kissing a newborn on the cheek. But the mind creates these obstacles. Oh my God. How am I going to do this? I don't have a PhD in alcoholism. I can never do it. I'm from the gutter. How can I do this? These people are smart and intelligent, and they're sober a long time. That's what was going on with me. So I just followed the leaders. And I remember when I finally got around some really neat people at this meeting called the Three Legacies Group in Minnesota, I held on to them like a puppy dog following his owner. Please don't leave me alone. Just tell me what to do. When I get home, tell me what to do, how to go to bed, and how to sleep tonight, because I'm afraid to tuck myself in because this thing is going to pull me out the door around midnight. Just tell me what to do. And I am not lying about this. I'm not exaggerating, not embellishing. There were so many times when I was living in this halfway house, and some of these elders gave me instructions, and I would follow it to the letter. This one gentleman, Kip S., gave me a little AA coin. You know, one of these first things, something like that. And I put it on my dresser drawer and I felt safe because it was given to me by Kip, who had 7 years at the time and was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm lying in my bunk and I swear to God, I got that little coin and like a kid, I tucked it under my pillow to feel safe from me because I was going to hurt me. I never forget, I tucked it under my pillow, and there was no like, I can't believe what I'm doing. I'm putting this under my pillow, and the angels will protect me. The AA angels are going to keep me safe, so I'll wake up sober tomorrow morning. That's where I was with desperation. I did not, thank the good Lord, take this thing for granted, and I pray 29 years later that I never do. I think my actions show I don't. It just frustrates me when I see people do, because I know where they're headed. So I got a pointer here. I came to believe that a power greater than myself is going to restore me to wholeness of mind. And when my mind's whole again because it's broken, I'm seeing the world through the mind, which is fear. I'm hearing the world through the mind, which is fear. I'm speaking to the world through the mind, which is fear. And my actions are fear-based and insecure. And it's always about trickling me back to a drink, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, but there's a drink waiting somewhere. When I'm not following directions, when the sponsor gives me directions and I push back and I figure I have a better way, there's a drink waiting for me. My mind doesn't say there's a drink waiting for you because it pretties up a junkyard, but there's a drink waiting for me. When my mind is restored to godliness, and we transcend this, that mind that told me to go drink doesn't talk to me about drinking anymore. So if my mind's not telling me to drink, I'm not drinking, which means the allergy is no longer happening. I'm free because of spiritual muscles. I'm working out in the spiritual gym called Alcoholics Anonymous and the Big Book. Page 45 tells me this. For me, probably the most important line for myself in the Big Book, it says, lack of power was my dilemma. Lack of power was my dilemma. As my sponsors show me, so with power, no dilemma. Where do I find this power? That's what this book is about. Its main object is to enable me to find a power greater than myself, which is going to solve my problem. Not just a drink problem, but my living problem. Because when you took a drink away from me, I go binge and purge. I go on a spree. I'm not much better. It's going to show me how to live this sober life, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. I had to begin somewhere. If I was having a step two problem, I had to revisit step one. What are the conditions about step one? What are the considerations they give me in step one? What's my condition? What's my truth? My truth is I'm alcoholic and I'm going to drink again. How do I stop that? Assuming I'm out of road and I really want to be done. It says I had to find a power by which I could live, and it had to be a power greater than myself, but where and how was I going to find this power? That's what this book is about. Chapter 3, Gnostics, is going to tell me where to find God, how to find God, and why I should find God. So I step up to the plate, and they show me chapter 2 agnostics. Now, I had no clue what an agnostic was. I was. Many of our AAs are agnostic with double-digit sobriety, where we don't deny the existence of a power out there. It's not tangible. We just can't prove the existence of it. And so that catapults me into a life of self-reliance. Because God's not working in a situation. I need to man up and put my hands on the wheel and take control. I can't let go and let God because it's going to get really bad. And I have fear and unmanageability and self-reliance. I can't see down the road, so I take over. And things only get worse. It makes the situation worse. How do you say it?
Exasperates.
What she said. One of the things my sponsor had me do to prove to me and to show me where my agnosticism lied, I was to write down on a sheet of paper all the areas in my life that I was unwilling to give over to God. And next to that, what was I afraid of? My money, I might be poor. My relationship, I'd have be alone. My job, I'll be unemployed. And I saw fear over and over and over again that I was afraid to turn this over to God because if God got a hold of it, it's not going to work out the way I want. So I forced myself into more managing it, and I saw agnosticism. And what I've learned, when I'm in a place of a current agnosticism, it means I have self-reliance going on. And if I have self-reliance going on, I have fear going on, which means I have current unmanageability going on. And it's this vicious cycle. And the more I try to dig myself out of the hole, I get deeper and deeper into the hole. Where do I find God? The great reality is deep down within. This inward journey. I don't find God out there. External conditions are always a liability, never a remedy for what ails me. God's here to seek and to save. I'm about to be transformed by this power, by Him going in and waking up the spirit, getting soul food. It's not about getting spiritual by acquiring things. By getting a good reputation. It means nothing to alcoholism. What I need to do is be immersed with this power. So where? Deep down within. How? Lay aside old ideas. Over and over and over again, the book talks about, Peter, just lay aside old ideas. My old ideas about God, about recovery, about life, just lay them aside. They don't say the ideas are wrong because they knew they were talking to an alcoholic who would immediately fight back. They just lay them aside. And why? When I see other people solving their problems upon a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, I had to stop doubting the power of God. The God idea worked. My ideas did not. So I come into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm looking for a miracle. And then I wake up one day, and there's 100 people in this room. I'm looking at 100 miracles. And most of those folks said they gave their life to this power called God, and they're not drinking anymore. And the condition of their life has changed dramatically. They have a purpose-driven life rather than a life with no rudder. They have places to be and people to meet and things to do, all because of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the drink is no longer in the equation anymore. Well, how do you do that? And it isn't all butterflies and rainbows. There's things. Life is volatile. We live in a world of impermanence. And yet they had a new GPS to navigate through that. And never once would you hear these people say, I thought about drinking over this. They weren't asking, why does this problem happen to me? Why is God sending me to trials of Job? They were saying, how do I get past it? What do I do about it? And surrendering it to God. I want what they got to offer. Huh? How, where, and why to find this power called God. Then the book tells me something that was just, they were brilliant. Bill was brilliant. And God gave him so much insight to put this together for a drunk like me. They don't tell me to believe a God of my religion because they knew I might push back on that. And I would have. I would have started to investigate and do due diligence into this God thing. Did you ever notice when you're again, I talked to the little dope fiends in here. There's a lot of them. They just went, yeah, man, that's me he's talking to now. When you're copping on the street, you don't do any due diligence. You don't get a spreadsheet on Flacco the drug dealer and where the powder was cut, what the temperature was, what's the quantity, the quality of it. You just cop and go. And then I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. I says, hold on a second. I need a report on God. Let me see the spreadsheet. Right? You ever notice how I'm like this? How I used to be so quick to accept bad things and sickness and hard times and just roll over on it. And I would be skeptical and doubtful and suspicious of godly things. And I'm sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, but the whole thing is godly. Or there must be an angle on something. Bill Dotson did that when Bill and Bob showed up. You know, who are you guys and what are you selling? Dr. Bob did that to Bill. What does he want? What is he selling? We're not. My book tells me that my own conception of God, no matter how, they mention this about 3 or 4 times, my own conception of God, no matter how inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach. I just had to be willing to grow. It doesn't say I have to say praise Jesus, praise Buddha, praise Allah, nothing like that. I don't even need to be religious in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I walk in the door, they're asking, how willing are you to be changed, to get out of the lane you've been driving in? Step one made me very willing. So my own conception of God, no matter how inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach. They didn't tell me to believe in a certain deity. They just says, choose your own conception of God. Ebby told Bill, choose your own conception of God. And Bill said it melted the icy intellectual mountain to which he stood and shivered for years. Bill had this idea of this religious God. And he said, Jesus was a great man, not followed by many, many hypocrites. So he had all this contempt. And Ebby says, Bill, choose your own conception of God, whatever works for you. Bill had no pushback. And when I got to chapter to agnostics with a sponsor, I had no pushback. Or they're not trying to sell me religion. My own conception, this is brilliant, my own conception of God, no matter how inadequate. So Joe, the old timer with double-digit sobriety, is sure about God, is certain about God, is convinced about God, and I'm not so sure. Is that's okay? What works for you? What's getting you through the night right now? And for me, I will tell you, it was my G.O.D. My first G.O.D. was the gift of desperation. Then I grew into a G.O.D. of a group of drunks for good, orderly direction. I came into AA meetings, a Band-Aid on an open wound. Loving people gathered around me. They start to know my name and gave me instructions. Kip S. gives me a coin. They would take me to the diner and give me these pep talks and give me instructions on what to do when I got home tonight and what to do tomorrow morning and how to get through my day. I was getting good orderly direction from people who had no investment in me. They weren't going to get anything back out of me except they were just going to stay sober. It's what we do. We stand by the door and wait for the new one. We wait for the old one who's falling apart. And they were just passing on freely what was freely given to them. I was getting good all the direction, and a week became a month, and a month became 6 months, and the next thing you know, I have a year. And they were still giving me the same information. Good orderly direction from a group of drunks. My AA meeting. I never had this before. I come from a nice family. I was lost in my family. I adore my family, but we had our stuff. There was no butterflies and angels in my family. My dad was, you know, a street guy, gangster kind of guy. He had a serious, serious gambling addiction. My dad showed up with a new caddy on Monday, and Tuesday was gone. Because he won it through gambling and lost it through gambling. He would take my mom on these fancy vacations, and then there were no vacations. He'd leave on a Friday and come home Tuesday because he was playing cards and shooting dice. Compulsive gambler. Mom was alcoholic and an addict. So they had their stuff, which means when you're in a family like that, people you speak at people. You don't talk to people. I don't have time for warm, fuzzy hugs. I got other agendas like when we're using. I don't have time to listen to you. Quick and out, I got something I have to do. So you grow up in that environment. They love me the best they could. They never try to hurt me. But there were no directions. No one gave me a manual on when you get to your senior year or junior year, we start planning for college, Peter. There was none of that. Just figure it out on your own. And I'm drunk by then. And then I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I saw God here. It was an easy conversion, especially with the old-timers. When I would sit next to them and I felt safe around them, safety in the numbers, and they were out to help me. And they really concerned about, how'd you do last night? Did you get home okay? How long are you sober now? They always have to know your day count. How long are you sober now? You know, 50 days, way to go. Way to go. You have 40 years. Why are you saying way to go? Because they were loving me unconditionally. So God knew how to show his mercy through people like you. And that was my conception of a God. At the beginning. Now, I'm a Catholic. I grew up with that God. And I never really lost faith with the carpenter. But the religion aspect, the whole arena, not good. It was cultish. It was clannish. It was cliquish. It was, I don't believe in it. So he says, I'm going to reveal myself to you through other AAs. He had to play perfectly. To speak to my heart, not to my head, but spoke to my heart. And that's what we do now. Bill talked about the language of the heart. You speak from the heart, you touch the heart, and God knows, God set the whole thing up. How am I going to get Pete Marinelli? You know, how am I going to get Freddie? How am I going to get Sal? How am I going to get Marion? I'll send those people to speak to their hearts to get them in here to save their life. How am I going to get Zach? We'll do this. He'll tell a bad joke. Everyone will laugh. You got to work on the jokes, Michael. A little rough. And that's what God did. So this is a pointer to the solution. I'm running out of time. That I'm going to get to a place that this power is going to do for me what I couldn't do for myself, and I will no longer be repeating the same thing over expecting different results. Our book talks about getting rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence. Rocketed. Bill's illustrates a rocket ship taking off power and speed. Rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence. What is he talking about? What is a fourth dimension existence that I'm about to set foot on that are no longer dominated by three dimensions, which many of us are when we come in here, dominated by my emotions, my compulsions, and my obsessions. We transcend all of that. I get to go past all of that and live in the world of God, godliness, the world of the Spirit, past those three. It starts with getting in position. Am I willing to do this walk? Step one says, yeah. If I have reservations, a lurking notion on step one, I'm not going to do this walk. In fact, the information you give me to do the walk becomes cumbersome. It's annoying. It's too difficult because I'm not done. I'm not out of road. But when I'm out of road, I'll chop wood and carry water. It has to be better than where I was and where I currently am. That's all I got. Peace. Thank you, man.
All right, let me thank Pete one more time. All right, now we have Fred coming up to the secretary's report.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Fred, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the Severn tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Jared to read the recovery statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Alcoholic named Jared.
Jared.
Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940-style Big Book sponsorship from forward to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sobered at once to remain that way, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, and come to believe and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above should suggest a 75% success rate. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Please raise your hand. You can just stand for a moment, please. Everyone who's available for sponsorship, can we please bring them back to God? Please join us Monday nights. We have a Big Book study meeting on the third floor in the same building where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30 and the meeting itself starts at 7:15. We have large print Big Book and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 8:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Thank you guys, and I'll see you next week.
We have tonight's sessions and all the past speaker podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone, as Fred said, to the Monday night Big Book study on the third floor up here in the Newman Center. And those who wish to thank the speaker tonight, please line up down the center aisle. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
See you all Monday. Godspeed.
I am desperately in need of restoration, yeah, and I am ready for you to take me higher, yeah. The only thing that I can do is keep on praying. Strong.
too much accumulation. Yeah. These possessions that I have amount to nothing at all. And I am willing to hand over every one of them. Cause they won't profit me anything in the end. On my own, I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try. But with you, I become a much stronger man.
Whoa!